From 9 News in Denver, Colorado, this is Blame, an ongoing investigation into a mother's death, her husband's secrets, and the lax police work that put blame squarely on the shoulders of their 6-year-old son. Was the shooting of Jill Wells really an accident? Join 9 Wants to Know in our pursuit to discover, is someone else to blame?
911, Lincoln County.
A gunshot echoes across a windswept prairie.
No, he's accidentally shot my wife.
A young mother dead.
Knowing everything,
you know, we have no proof of anything
that we know now.
An investigation over before it began.
That child was innocent.
I feel like I failed him too.
Gut feelings.
Oh man, if I just would have known this a long time ago.
There was a lot of red flags.
And an unanswered question.
The preponderance of evidence.
Oh, I would have done something about this.
This really points to a homicide.
Was a 6-year-old really to blame?
If we were recording right now a podcast, what should we be focusing on? It's been a year since we were first here. Why are we here? Why are we about to walk in and talk to the sheriff?
It's a sunny day in Hugo, an hour and 45 minutes from Denver. Producer Anna Houston and I just pulled into the parking lot outside the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office. We're back where we first started looking for answers in the death of Jill Wells, killed on a remote ranch in 2001 in a shooting that her husband blamed on the couple's 6-year-old son, Tanner. Our podcast and our stories shine light on this case and on Colorado's system, where people with no medical background or training can serve as county coroners. Now we're back to talk to Sheriff Tom Nestor and Coroner Andy Lawrenson to find out what's new. But first, we need a little impromptu strategy call with our executive producer, Nicole Vapp, who's at the office back in Denver.
Well, you know, we're going in to talk to the latest people in charge of this case. You know, how do they see this different than anyone else that's been in charge there?
Does somebody in the system, the collective system of all the agencies that had some piece of this, the sheriff, the coroner, the district attorney, etc., does somebody in the system owe more to Jill Wells, to Tanner Wells, to Jill's family, even to Mike Wells and his memory, you know? And what is that? What should the average person expect if this was their loved one who had died? And they had had an investigation done the way this one was done, and the questions that have surrounded this for this number of years, what should they expect? That's one thing I want to know.
Okay, it's been a while since our last episode, so a few reminders. This is a story about Mike and Jill Wells, who from outside appearances had it all. His construction business looked to be thriving. She was a respected nurse at a Colorado Springs hospital. They had two beautiful boys, a big house, new cars. But lurking beneath that veneer were a lot of problems, financial and marital. Mike was behind on child support for two kids from a previous marriage. The couple was in serious debt and continually behind on their taxes. Mike had a drug problem, and Jill and many others suspected he was involved with another woman. In early 2001, Jill applied for more than $1 million in life insurance. It was Mike's idea. 5 weeks later, she was dead, and the investigation was cursory at best. The sheriff at the time, Leroy Yowell, and his son, Under Sheriff Alan Yowell, spent less than 2 hours at the scene. They didn't take fingerprints, didn't test the 4 guns they found, didn't follow up on reports that Mike was having an affair. Then they returned the guns to Mike the next day. The coroner at the time, Don Bender, decided no autopsy was necessary. Although it would be weeks before the official report would be issued, the investigation was essentially over in a day. Then Mike died of a drug overdose in 2008, just after the case was reopened.
And I'd like to know, one of the things that we've heard a lot of people ask us is, why does this matter? Because Mike Wells is dead. And if he's the main other suspect and Tanner can't be charged, then why go through all this? Just let it lie. Is that fair to Tanner? And how much does that weigh on people making decisions about what to do in this case?
Right. And if you asked me that question, I would say it's more than that. It is what should Tanner expect and what does he take from all this, and that's for him to decide, obviously. But this case is also speaks to a larger issue, right? Because even today, if this shooting happened just like this today, there's nothing in Colorado law that would require the coroner to do anything differently than what he did 16 years ago. And, you know, the Coroner's Association, you know, points out that they have these new guidelines for autopsies that have been adopted since then. But when you read the guidelines, the one that applies to a case like Jill's says there has to be known or suspected criminal activity. And we have to assume that the people at the scene that day didn't know or suspect criminal activity, or they would have done many things that they didn't do.
Jill's sister, Joy, suspected the worst from the beginning. In 2003, she and another sister, Julie, came to Colorado asking questions. They got nowhere. Julie returned 5 years later and found there was a new sheriff in town, Tom Nestor, and a deputy willing to listen to her, Albert Leach. Nestor and Leach reopened the case. And though they discovered one red flag after another, beginning with the life insurance, the investigation stalled after Mike's death. In 2016, we started asking questions to see if more could be done.
A year ago, we were sitting in the same parking lot. At that time, did you think we would be here a year later, still trying to figure out what's going on with this case?
Yeah, I thought this might take a while. I really did. I if you had said a year, I might have said, yeah, maybe a year. I mean, obviously, we always want to get these things done more quickly than they sometimes happen. But I've worked on other stories like this that took this long before. So I'm not that surprised, knowing how complicated this is and how many things we had to deal with the family, with various authorities, trying to track down information that nobody else had tried to track down before.
For me, it's interesting that it's kept the interest of the sheriff's department for the past year, and they're still working with us to try and figure this out. They haven't moved on.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'd say over and over again, the current sheriff, Tom Nestor, has opened his files to us and answered every question and made themselves available and has been very responsive as we have proceeded on this journey. As a reporter, there's nothing I appreciate more than public officials that believe seriously in the public's right to know what they're doing.
I'd like to ask them, has anyone come forward since our stories have aired and since the podcast has been out there to shed any new light or perhaps create more questions about what happened that day?
Yeah, that's a good question. We'll ask that question. I know that a lot of the people that contacted me were people that whose names I'd never heard that sort of filled in blanks or confirmed things that we suspected, or in a lot of cases, confirmed things that we already knew.
And what's left for them to do? Can they compel people who didn't want to talk to us to talk? Can they do more investigating that we haven't thought of? That all sits on my brain, because the one person who is alive who was there that day, as we've, you know, talked to experts, may have questionable memories.
All right, thanks, Nicole.
All right, Godspeed. Call me afterwards. I'm dying to know what they say.
A blustery wind blows as Anna and I walk to the sheriff's door.
They're here.
Kevin.
How are you, sir?
Just fine. How are you?
Good. You remember Anna?
We'll let you in, but Anna's going to stay home.
Okay.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Good.
Sheriff Nestor takes a seat in a conference room, the banker's box containing Jill Wells' case file at his side.
So it's been a few weeks since we aired our reports and published our stories, and of course since we've had the podcast.
Right.
What's new from your perspective?
We've developed a couple of leads from the news story, people that have contacted us directly and wanted to talk to us. We're in the process of setting those up now. Not sure where that will take us, but any new information is good in this case.
Are these people that your office had not previously spoken with?
That's correct. People that we actually didn't even have names for.
Are you hopeful they may be able to shed light on some aspect of this that you don't currently know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously we've got a lot of new information since we reopened it in 2008, but given the circumstances, the only thing we can hope for now is somebody does come forward with information that we don't have to move the case further on in the investigation.
What would be your ultimate hope? In a perfect world, what would you hope you could accomplish?
You know, in a perfect world, it'd be the same as what we hoped for in 2008, that we could prove that that Tanner didn't do this. But right now, I don't know that we can do that without further information from people coming forward to give us maybe something that was said or done in the past. So in a perfect world, I'd like to give some closure to this family, and that was the ultimate goal all along.
One of the things that we've talked about that's sort of a, I think maybe a frustration, is that the combination of the passage of time and the fact that Mike Wells is dead,
right,
has sort of left this situation where your role in this, the coroner's role, the district attorney's role, nobody has this mandate to take this on, right?
Right.
The district attorney pointed out to us, like, his job is to prosecute cases.
Right.
In this case, at this point, it doesn't look like there's anybody to prosecute.
That's correct, yeah.
And yet at the same time, just thinking as a citizen, the question that keeps coming to my mind is, like, is something more owed to Jill Wells and to her family and to her son and even to Mike Wells,
right,
by the system? And by the system, I mean, you know, collectively everybody,
right,
involved in this. What do you think about that?
You know, I totally understand mandates. When we reopened this in 2008, it wasn't because we absolutely had to. I think morally, I think it was the right thing to do. There's enough red flags in this case that we felt like we needed to push forward and get the truth. And I do think the system itself, working with the coroners, working with the DAs, we do owe it to the victims of crime to solve these cases.
When we talked before, you talked about the idea of even meeting with Tanner and,
sure,
being able to talk to him. Is that still something you think about doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I mean, I seen what Tanner wrote for your investigation, so we totally respect where he stands. And I would like to talk to him here in the future, and there will be a time that I can do that. I think that we need to continue to follow up with this case and see where it takes us, and ultimately I would love to sit down with Tanner and talk to him one-on-one about this case.
What Tanner wrote was simple, that he remembered what happened the day his mother died, and that the gun was in his hands, not his dad's, when she was shot.
Do you see any scenario where there's a prosecutable offense still out there, barring discovering some other person being involved,
yeah,
that nobody's ever known about?
You know, with all the investigation that's been done since 2008, there's only really one suspect in this case, Mike Wells. He's gone. Having that issue, obviously there's nothing to prosecute. But I still think it's important to go forward to try to give some closure to the family, the sisters, even Tanner, and Mike's family, I mean, there's a lot of questions in this case that needs to be answered, and honestly, I don't know if we'll ever get them all answered. Again, we go back to any unsolved case, and I consider this an unsolved case. We owe it to these people, to the community, to look farther into that. And, you know, if we quit doing that, then we're going to fail at our jobs. And I think that no matter how big your agency is or how small it is, you owe it to the people to look further into that.
But the sheriff is only one part of the equation. In the wake of our reports, another official, Lincoln County Coroner Andy Lawrenson, was urged to look into Jill's death. After we finished talking to the sheriff, we sat down with him.
And you're the Lincoln County Coroner?
I am. I was elected in 14 and took office in 15.
In thinking about the Jill Wells case, obviously this is a case that happened long before you became coroner.
Correct.
You initially were confronted with just what was in the file in your office. Did you have any impression of it when you initially looked at it?
Talking with the sheriff's office, getting a better idea of their file was a lot more comprehensive than mine. It looked like it really could go either way.
And when I looked at this, it looked to me like you basically probably had three options. You could do nothing. You could leave the death certificate as it was. You could amend the death certificate in some way, or you could do further investigation, maybe through an inquest, which is something I know one of your predecessors considered doing for a time in this case.
An inquest is a little used hearing where coroners can issue subpoenas, call witnesses, take testimony, and gather evidence, all of it considered by a jury of citizens that renders a determination on how and why someone died.
The only options that I looked at most closely were leaving it as it was, as an accidental or amending it to undetermined, because there really is facts to support both, that this could have been an accidental death or it could have been a homicide.
Did you think much about an inquest?
I thought some about an inquest, but in this case, it didn't seem to have a lot of value. That would, because the witnesses that I would want to call are no longer available.
Mike Wells, for example.
Mike Wells would have been a primary, and I'm obviously not going to ask Tanner to come back to Colorado to be a part of an inquest for me. He's gone through enough. I'm not going to ask him to do that.
Let's talk about the options facing a coroner filling out a death certificate. The cause of a person's death can be anything. In Jill's case, it was a gunshot wound to the head. That's never been in dispute. But there's also a section for the manner of death. And there, coroners have only six options: natural, accidental, suicide, homicide, pending investigation, and undetermined. Back in 2001, then-Lincoln County Coroner Don Bender called Jill's death an accident, an official endorsement of the story told by Mike Wells, that Tanner fired that shot. After our reports, Lawrenson consulted the sheriff, the district attorney, and a well-respected former coroner, and he decided the right thing to do was to amend Jill's death certificate. He changed the manner of death. Now it says, could not be determined.
Have you ever amended a death certificate before?
Not in this manner, no. It's a routine practice to amend death certificates, but mainly it's because the cause of death is pending. Once we get the autopsy report back, I fill out the final. But not in this manner, no. Not going back years and years and having to research and make a decision, no.
Do you have any doubt in your mind if you were called to a scene like this today that you'd have an autopsy done?
No, there's no doubt in my mind. There would not have been an autopsy done.
Let's say that the sheriff were to reach a point through his further investigation where he said, I'm comfortable saying this was a homicide. I guess the death certificate could be amended again. Is that what would happen?
It's correct. If there was enough evidence to support, true evidence to support a finding of homicide, I would, if I'm still in office, I would consider amending it again.
If there is one person qualified to pass judgment on Lawrence's decision, it's Dr. Michael Doberson. You probably remember him. He was Arapahoe County's coroner for more than 20 years, a man who performed more than 6,000 autopsies, including the one on Jill's body after it was exhumed in 2008. He greets us at the door of his mountain home with his dachshund, Jackson. Then we head up to his office to talk about Jill's case, about Lawrenson's decision to reclassify Jill's death, and specifically, his thoughts on that.
I guess my reaction would be complicated. On one level, he's the elected coroner, and this is his jurisdiction, and that's his decision, and it's a decision he's going to have to live with, and in some ways have the ability to justify that decision. I don't necessarily agree with it, but that comes from my perspective and my involvement of the case, in the case. I did the autopsy on Jill Wells. I know what I found. I worked closely with CBI. I worked closely with the Lincoln County coroner on the case. And knowing everything that I know, I don't have any qualms about sticking my neck out in some way to say that this is a homicide. All the evidence points to it, and that would be my conclusion. But that's my conclusion based on my training and my experience and my over 20 years of experience as a medical examiner and coroner. And I'm not sure why he decided to make that decision. That's something that he would answer for. But in some ways, it doesn't really provide an answer as to what happened. It's kind of a punt. And in that sense, I just wonder how the family's going to feel about that. But again, that's Andy's decision, and he's got to stand by it and justify it.
Kind of like kissing your sister?
It's kind of like kissing your sister, yeah. I have certified cases as undetermined as well. So, I mean, I've been in that situation. But in this particular case, I'm not sure it's justified.
On the other hand, he also could have left the death certificate alone and I suppose not even, not passed any sort of official pronouncement on his predecessor's decisions.
He could have, and at least we're sort of moving in the right direction. The classification undetermined signifies that there's some degree of uncertainty in what we know happened. And obviously, I would agree with that. There were no witnesses, at least no witnesses giving credible information at the time and even now. So we're left with, in some ways, a circumstantial case. But even given that, I think it's still possible to arrive at a conclusion about what happened, and that's, I believe, homicide.
Do you have any guesstimate of how many times in your career you had a reopened case where you then amended a death certificate?
I can think of two or three cases in my career where I had to amend a death certificate. One may have been a case that I handled, and another was a case where the previous coroner had made a determination that subsequent evidence found that was wrong. So it does happen.
We were out in Lincoln County yesterday, actually, and the sheriff, Tom Nestor, they've received a few tips, one in particular that they're quite interested in as a result of our stories about this. And so from a criminal investigative standpoint, they're continuing to do some work on this. Don't know where it's going to go, don't know if it's going to provide a more satisfying answer or solution. But I asked, so what happens if that leads to a clear-cut determination by you that this was a homicide? And the coroner said, we can amend the death certificate again. Have you ever heard of a death certificate being amended twice?
Yes.
It has happened?
Oh, yeah, it does happen. I mean, unfortunately, when something bad happens, it's just impossible to know everything at the time, and things can develop over a period of time. So, yeah, it can't happen.
And I guess that's a bridge that might be crossed at some point in the future, I suppose, if the evidence backs it up.
It might be, and that's good to hear. It's good to hear that law enforcement really never gives up on these cases. And one of the things that we always try to teach coroners is that a case is really never closed. You think that you've got all the information, you think you've signed it out correctly, but information comes to light later, and you've got to be able to set the record straight because it is a public record.
I mean, who knows how often this happens and it's never discovered.
That's right. The mistakes are buried. And one of the best descriptions of what we do came from one of the small county coroners. When asked about what does a coroner do, she said, we write the last chapter in a person's life. What could be more important than that?
Despite changing the death certificate, Lawrenson, the current county coroner, told us he hadn't contacted Jill's family and he wasn't planning to. So I called three of her sisters, who have all helped tell the story of what happened to her. I told Joy, the first to suspect that it was Mike who killed Jill. I talked to Lynn, who became Tanner's guardian after Mike's death. And I had my longest conversation with Julie, whose questions led Lincoln County authorities to reopen the case in 2008, and who helped convince other members of her family that the time was right to tell Jill's story.
Hi, Julie.
Hi, Kevin.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So, Julie, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some things happening in Jill's case. The Lincoln County coroner has filed paperwork to change the death certificate from accident to undetermined.
I think it's great. We've been waiting a long time for this, some kind of a change, and our whole family is just blessed and thankful to you and to Tom Nestor, Albert Leach, for just taking good care of us and looking for the truth. I just think that that's the biggest thing, is that they're recognizing that the case was wrong, that they made mistakes. We're thankful.
Does it feel that way to you, sort of an official acknowledgement of the problems with the original investigation and the original conclusions?
Yeah, for sure. Knowing that they didn't do fingerprints, ballistics, no autopsy, I think that was a mistake. So I think they're acknowledging that they made mistakes, and Tanner wasn't to blame. He never should have been to blame. So that's our main concern, was Tanner and what this was going to do to him. So that's it. I mean, my sister was a person, and I felt like she didn't get treated like one. I felt like she was a number, and they could have done so much more to figure out what happened that day. But it was like everything was swept away and under the rug, and they didn't give her a fair chance. So, and in turn, they didn't give our family a fair chance to grieve and to even get any closure. So that's the big part, is that we have for 16 years wondered what happened that day. And finally now we're at least getting some answers to some of the questions. So we're thankful.
I sort of have always felt like, even though the coroner is only one part of the equation, I've always sort of thought that the death certificate saying that it was an accident was sort of the official stamp of the state of Colorado on the version of events that Mike provided that day. And now it feels like, you know, there's acknowledgement that the evidence doesn't support that, isn't strong enough to conclude that that's definitely what happened, you know?
Right. I'm hoping that this will maybe change the laws in Colorado to anybody who wants to be a coroner should be qualified and certified and go through training and not just be 21 and, you know, have a driver's license or whatever they need. I think that's a big thing, because if they don't know what they're doing, they don't do it. So, I mean, that's basically what happened to Jill, you know, and basically I feel like she wasn't a person that day. She was a nobody, and it didn't matter what happened that day, and they just didn't do enough, not enough for me or my family or Tanner or Mike or Jacob. You know, I mean, the whole family, everybody is included in that, you know. I don't think it was fair.
One thing you told me before, you know, was that that you had felt some guilt over the years about not pushing for answers, not asking questions, not, you know, rocking the boat, I guess. Finding out that the death certificate is being changed, does that start to, I mean, do you feel differently knowing that that's being done? Does that make sense?
I feel like it's all been worth it. I mean, I think that now that we have gone through these podcasts, these amazing podcasts that honor my sister and tell truth, and they're not made up, they're real. That has given us hope, and it's also brought a lot of closure to questions, and we feel like Jill has been honored, and people are remembering her as a beautiful soul and a beautiful person that just didn't get done right. I feel like she wasn't done right by the system, and I feel like now we're honoring her and we love her and people know her now as a person, as a loving mother and daughter and sister, and we're just thankful. So, yeah, I don't know. Not sure what else to say.
So the other thing I wanted to tell you, we talked to Sheriff Nestor last week, and they got some tips after the stories ran, and they're doing some follow-up interviews with some people later this week, as a matter of fact. And I know one of them was from someone who knew Jill and Mike and has a lot of questions about, particularly about money and where the money went and the involvement of some other people. The other person I don't know as much about, the sheriff, you know, is he's trying to do a proper investigation, and so he's not talking to us at this point about what exactly the tips are, but they're going, you know, down to the Colorado Springs area to do some more interviews this week, so they're continuing to work on it.
I think that it's just another step closer to really finding out the truth about this situation and, you know, what was going on in Jill's life at that time. I mean, we all want to know where Mike's head was. You know, we all want to know where Tanner was and where the boys were and, you know, what Jill was doing. Was she, you know, hurting? Was she, you know, was she happy? I don't know. I'm not sure if she didn't share all that stuff with us. I think that she was too worried that we would worry. So, you know, she was a little isolated, but I mean, finding out from her friends, she had a lot of good friends that, you know, would pray with her and talk to her. But I do believe that there are some people out there that need to come forward. I don't know if they would ever go through this thing, but if somebody else had information, they would want to know. So I just encourage anybody that has information to come through, you know, and talk about it, because we don't know. We don't know everything, and we want to know. You know, it's been 16 years, and some people may say that it's kind of stupid for us to bring this up. I've read some things online that, you know, why don't you talk about today? But, I mean, it's not just today. It's yesterday is today for us all the time, you know, I mean, because we still have answers, and I think, you know, I feel like she was a person, and if it was your sister, if it was your family, anybody would want to keep on trying to find out the truth. So that's pretty much what I feel. I feel like I'm thankful for anybody that wants to share any information.
Yeah, and we should know more about what those people have to say and how the sheriff evaluates that, you know, after they do those interviews, and you know, there may be some follow-up that comes out of those with still other people, which would be, you know, it'd be interesting to see what else they can learn.
I know that her life meant something, and I believe that she changed lives, and she changed my life. She's changed a lot of people, you know, even through this podcast. But I want everything to be better for the next family that has to go through this. I want everybody to have some peace of mind and not have to wonder and worry because of a botched investigation or, you know, somebody that really doesn't understand what they're doing. I don't know, we're just blessed to, I guess I could say that God brought you into our lives for a good reason and a good cause to fight for the truth.
Well, I appreciate all that. That's nice of you to say, and I would certainly say that we appreciate the fact that all of you, you know, were so, you know, so willing to open your hearts to us and to tell your story. And I know it wasn't always easy, and I know that losing someone that you love that's important to you is something you live with for the rest of your life, and we appreciate that. We really do appreciate that. And I'm eager to see what sort of new information the sheriff might turn up in talking to these people. I think that there's no way to change what was done 16 years ago. You know, we can't go back in time and do it differently, but the authorities now certainly seem to be taking it pretty seriously and trying to figure out what they can do at this point.
Well, I hope we'll just keep on finding answers and getting more information. So you guys are the best. All I can say is that I really love my nephews, Tanner and Jacob, and I didn't do this to hurt you. I've never wanted to hurt you. I've tried to do this with love and kindness, and also my whole family. I'm thankful that they were willing to finally let this door be opened and not to shut it out, because it was hard. It's been hard to hold it in. And I was thankful that we could actually cry again and talk about our beautiful sister. And I didn't do it to hurt anybody. I didn't do it to hurt Tanner. I feel like maybe that is possibly what he feels, but I've always loved that boy. He's always loved me, and I didn't do that. I did that because I love my sister as much as he loves his brother, and I believe that anybody would do that. I think everybody should do that for their brother or sister. Jill would have done this for me probably the day it happened. And I was just a little maybe too naive or a little too loving and didn't have a lot of money, you know. I'm thankful that we finally opened it up and here we are. So I'm okay.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I know it's still emotional.
It's very emotional. I don't usually cry, but I guess I was thinking about how much it meant to me to be able to talk about what was happening and be able to talk about it. So, and that's what you gave me, was this freedom and people know my sister now. They love her. They think that she's beautiful. And she went through a lot. And those boys went through a lot. And Mike went through a lot. And, you know, I don't know what to say. But, you know, everybody was hurt that day. It wasn't just Jill. It was her whole family and Mike's family and our family. And so that's about it. I better not talk anymore. I'm sorry. I'm probably just rambling.
So here we are, a year after we started investigating the death of Jill Wells, with many new answers and still nagging, lingering questions. And some official action. Jill's death certificate now reflects the reality of the evidence in the case, that it doesn't support the definitive conclusion that Tanner Wells accidentally shot and killed his mother. We'll continue following up. Sheriff Nestor plans to talk to some people who wouldn't talk to us, people who may know things that have never been disclosed. For now, that's it. We'll be back when we can report new developments. Blame is a production of KUSA-TV, 9 News, and Tegna Media. Nicole Vapp is executive producer, Anna Houston is the producer and editor, and I'm investigative reporter Kevin Vaughn. Find photographs, police reports, maps, and other evidence on 9news.com/blame.